sought the vote of the Honorable Chief Justice Stephen R. Jensen presiding is now in session.
You may be seated. Thank you. Good morning. Well, I don't have much of a light, but I think it's on. This morning, we have a rules hearing set. We have seven proposed rules. The first five of those rules relate to amendments from the Board of Bar Examiners. So I'm going to ask Ann Myers, do you want to come up and speak on those five proposals?
Thank you. Ann Mines Bailey on behalf of the South Dakota Board of Bar Examiners. Before the court are several proposals that actually fall into three categories. The first category is just to streamline and encourage use of our bar portal to move us more towards paperless. The second category is concerning the timeliness of materials, what is considered outdated, particularly the MBE scores. There's been some confusion about what constitutes a qualifying MBE score for transfer. And then the third category is the more substantive change that involves student practice. We found that there's a period of time where some people have passed the bar exam but are still awaiting a character and fitness review. And so their student practice certificate may run out because it's only good for 3 months. So there's this limbo period where we know they've passed the bar, we're still conducting the character and fitness review, and we'd like to be able to give them an extension of their student practice certificate. And we felt that the person most suited, the entity most suited to make that determination would be the Board of Bar Examiners rather than the dean. So that's the third change. We have received only one set of comments, to my knowledge, and those were by Neil Fulton, Dean of the University of South Dakota Knudsen School of Law, and they are favorable to these changes. Would you like more detail, or?
Let me just ask if there's any questions from the court for Ms. Mines Bailey. I think we're good. Thank you.
Thank you much.
Does anyone else wish to speak either for or against the rules this morning? Dean Fulton.
Members, Chief Justice, members of the court, Neil Fulton from the University of South Dakota Knudsen School of Law. I want to start by emphasizing I am in town for other stuff. I didn't just come up for this. But I echo what Ann has said about the rules and fully support rules 1 through 5. I particularly like number 5. I will say, as dean, the character and fitness certification process for student practice sometimes gives me pause in that I'm asked to certify things that I don't always know the supervising attorney out-of-state students, and I think this is a good refinement of assigning the oversight of those students once they've graduated to the board, where I think it belongs rather than me. So fully supportive, happy to field any questions, just glad to be here.
Questions?
So, Dean Fulton, has it ever been otherwise? Has it always been with reference to the final proposal? Has the dean always been in this supervisory capacity? I didn't research the history of the provision.
I don't know, Justice Kern. It has been that way since I have been there. I mean, I don't know if you go way back if it is different. I honestly don't recall from my time where I had the student practice certification. I assume I had to get certification from Dean Vickery at that point, but I don't honestly know.
Thank you.
I can speak from way back. I don't recall the specific rule that was in place, but I know when I interned in the summer between second and third year, I received a dean certificate allowing me to practice that summer in court with supervision.
So I may not have understood the question. Are you asking, Justice Kern, if you've always had to have a dean certify your ability to student practice?
Or if it was ever with the board previously, or if it's always been with the dean, if it's always been arranged that way.
So I don't know the exact, I'm going to try my answer again. I came up not anticipating questions, and I messed one up, which is really impressive. So I know there's always been a role for the dean to certify certain aspects of that student, right? That they have completed the number of hours and credits that puts them basically after second year status, that you don't know of any character and fitness issues. I was thinking of the part once they've actually completed law school. I don't know if there's always been a role for the dean in that, on extending that. But there's always been that role that we sign off on the student.
Okay, thank you.
Honestly, as nervous as I've ever been there. So. Thank you.
The last two rules are from the State Court Administrator's Office. We'll take up number six first. That's a confidential information proposed amendment to SDCL 16-21-6. Jeff Tronville is here to speak on behalf of the State Court Administrator's Office.
Thank you, Chief Justice, Justices. Yes, this is a proposed rule that was suggested by the Clerk's Advisory Council, and this is kind of protection for the clerks. Oftentimes, these types of exhibits would be sealed either by the parties or the court on its own motion. In case something like this were to come into the clerk's office and it was not sealed by the court order, this would allow them to seal it at least electronically. It's not sealed completely because without a court order, it's not sealed completely, so someone would have to come to the clerk of court's office to view it. We did get a comment from Judge Rank. I sent that to you last week. She had concerns about the phrase by way of the paper record only, and so I recommended perhaps we could change that to by way of the clerk of court, if not otherwise sealed, and I believe that resolves her her issues with it. I did not hear back from her after I sent her a draft, but I believe that that clears up her concerns.
Any questions for Mr. Tronbold on Proposal 6?
I don't know if it's really a question, but the way you just described it is actually what I was going to suggest, maybe for even more clarity, by way of clerk of court. So, but what you're talking about is something being able to go in there and view it, right? It's not that they can get a copy of it, or it's just a viewing. So I wonder if it would even be clearer to just say it will be accessible for viewing in the clerk of court's office, or a little simpler. If that is what the intent was.
Yes.
Okay. Or through, would it work? The depictions will be accessible through the clerk of courts?
Maybe that's
not an improvement. But
in any event, regardless of how we end that sentence, you're suggesting that we modify the current proposal to reflect your letter of August 22nd?
I think that is the clear.
Okay. Anything else from Mr. Tronbold on that rule? Anyone else wish to speak either in favor or against the proposed rule? Okay, the last proposal is number 7. That's a proposed new rule relating to filing documents by affirmation rather than on oath. We do have one letter or email responding to that from Dean Nacer, which is in the packet. Mr. Tronville, do you want to speak to that?
So this is also a rule that's brought or suggested from our clerk support staff. And the ultimate intent is to make it easier to file electronic documents that are signed under penalty of perjury. The language that I use, I know there was a concern about the last sentence from that email. The two sentences above that come directly from SDCL Chapter 18-7, and that was the Uniform Unsworn Domestic Declarations Act that allows documents to be signed under penalty of perjury without a notary seal. We are just trying to clarify that this would apply to court documents as well, unless a notary is required in another context. The last sentence, the reason I included that, just to clarify that someone is signing under penalty of perjury and would be subject to perjury, whether it's notarized or not, if this language is used and it's filed, dishonestly. I don't believe that it creates a new form of perjury or a new criminal penalty. I think it's just clarifying that If the language in 18.6, or excuse me, 18-7 is used, that someone could be subject to criminal penalty for perjury. As I read through it again here in the last few days preparing for today, I do believe that if the court has concerns about that, the last sentence could be deleted and it would not change the substance of the rule, because the two sentences previous to that kind of lay out the requirements for a statement signed under penalty of perjury.
Forgive me, I'm so sorry. So your intent was to not truly create an offense, but to apply existing rules to reach a conclusion that this sort of a declaration or signature would constitute one of those 18-7 acknowledgments or signatures,
yes,
right?
Yes, that was our intent.
And my understanding is one of the big reasons for this proposal are things like protection orders that are often filed pro se,
right,
on the,
correct.
On
so
the
this
computer.
Will really be pro se filings as well.
Any other questions from the court? Okay, anyone else wish to speak either for or against that proposed rule? Not hearing any other comments, we'll consider the rules hearing to be concluded at this time. Appreciate everyone coming up and providing your comments to the court. Very helpful. Thank you.